Du lyssnar nu på inspelningen från seminariet Ojämlikhet, vad kan vi göra? Ett seminarium som Arena Idé arrangerade tillsammans med LO den 2 november. I den här delen kan du höra LOs chefsekonom Ola Pettersson och statssekreterare Carolina Ekholm kommentera Tony Atkinsons presentation och konkreta förslag för hur vi minskar inkomstskillnaderna. Missa inte den andra delen från seminariet som du också hittar via Arena Play, där Tony Atkinson presenterar sina förslag. Vill ni se seminariet i sin helhet så finns det filmat och upplagt på LO Play.
I'll reflect on three topics. First, where are we in terms of inequality and why? Secondly, why I think Mr. or Professor Atkinson's book is excellent and should be read by all ambitious progressive politicians. And then lastly, a short comment on the actual proposals, and which I think have a future in Sweden. But to start off, as you perhaps most of you know, Sweden was probably the most equal country in the world in terms of disposable income around 1980. Since then, Sweden has seen perhaps the sharpest increase in inequality among OECD countries. Sweden is still a relatively equal country, of course, but quite quickly becoming less so. And there are many factors behind this. During the 80s and 90s, we saw increasing wage dispersion. This development has now come to halt. But since then, we've had mainly seeing capital incomes driving increasing inequality. As Professor Piketty mentioned, relative poverty has doubled during the period of 1995 to 2012. And the rate of increase was particularly sharp during the previous government. I would dare to say that very much of the increases in inequality we have seen since 2000 are the result of a concrete political agenda and concrete political reforms. And I'll mention a few of the most important reforms in this respect. We have abolished inheritance and gift tax. We have abolished wealth tax. We have, in practical terms, abolished the property tax. It's now turned into a regressive UK-style kind of council tax. We've seen the hollowing out of unemployment insurance. We've seen quite massive, I would say, subsidies on rich people's consumption. And we've introduced a school voucher system. So you could say Sweden has laid a kind of groundwork for a vicious circle of quickly increasing inequality. It's still held back to some extent by a kind of equality ethos. And this becomes, it's actually still necessary to dress up quality reforms as leading to increasing equality to be able to get them through Parliament. Perhaps this will change in the coming years, I don't know. We still have quite strong labour unions, making sure that earnings or labor incomes are still quite concentrated. But these are the kind of the existing counter forces. Now on to why I think Professor Atkinson's book is so important. I think it's an excellent starting point for anyone who wants to formulate a new kind of equality agenda. My view is that this has been missing from Sweden for a very long time. I think we talked about actually wanting to do something about inequality sometime in the 70s or 80s. Since then, it's not been at the top of the agenda. I think full employment will be part of such an agenda, but it will have to include other ingredients. Professor Atkinson's book goes through all the chains in the link from market incomes via taxes, transfers, welfare services, ending up with disposable incomes. And I think a complete equality agenda will have to look at all these chains in the link. I think the book is unique in that it is based on a great familiarity with how labor markets actually work. This is quite rare, in my view, in modern economics. It also gives a very broad scope to economic policy. It includes competition and innovation policy. For me, this is it really adds something. It also has a very, it's grounded in a kind of in a political analysis, in that it sees power, particularly countervailing power, as a central concept. I of course see trade unions as one of the main countervailing powers in a advanced economy. Also, this focus on trade unions is quite unique in the literature. I think it's part of a trend where we see many leading economists in Anglo-Saxon countries have a kind of reborn interest in the role of collective bargaining and trade unions as instruments to bring about more equal incomes. One other perspective I really would like to highlight, which I find very rewarding, is the view that incomes are to a large extent, of course, determined by market forces, but they set more of an interval of possible outcomes, where the actual outcome is fixed by power balance in society, in the labor markets. And I think this has to be understood to have a more realistic view of why inequality comes about and how labor markets work. Lastly, I would like to comment on some of the proposals. Some are in place. We have an explicit unemployment target. We have labor income taxes that are clearly progressive, although our top tax rate is 56, not 65, as proposed by Professor Atkinson. Some, if we had the political will and the opportunity, I really feel should be implemented right away. I think the progressive lifetime capital receipts tax is an excellent idea. A proportional or progressive property tax should, and I assume in a few years, I assume it will be back. We really need to see increased child benefit, possibly financed by becoming taxed as income. This, of course, can be debated. And we need a renewal of social insurance, particularly unemployment insurance, where both levels of benefits and coverage are today clearly inadequate. I'm very curious about some other proposals, and they clearly need to be investigated further. Talking about innovation policy, is it possible to direct technological change? That needs to be thought about. Is it possible to introduce a distributional dimension into competition policy? I think it might. And I think that's also a very interesting proposal. We're very far from it right now, but I really think it should be thought about. Some proposals clearly fit less well with how the Swedish labor markets work. If we're talking about minimum wages, which we don't really have in Sweden. If we're talking about national pay policy, which labor unions, I guess, would be very much against. But they, of course, highlight important areas. And I finished the book here during the weekend, so I can't say I've fully absorbed it yet. But I will certainly look at all these 15 proposals more in detail in the coming years. Perhaps the least attractive part of Professor Atkinson's agenda is the kind of push for an ownership society or an equal, we're talking about guaranteed inheritance and so forth. I'm not sure this would in any major way change the kind of dynamics which seem to lead to inequality in our kind of society. But these are early days. We need to think about those areas too. But most of all, thank you for an excellent read and for clarifying what kind of problems we have ahead of us. Thank you.
And thank you for inviting me to comment on this very interesting book. And I'll get to what the government is trying to do, but let me first make a few comments about the book, which I think is one that you should all read. It's a little bit big, but at least it's not as big as Piketty's Capital book. And as was said here, it's actually quite an easy read. And it's very thought-provoking. And I think maybe you have to be as distinguished as Professor Atkinson to be able to write such a book and to propose the kind of measures that he is proposing. And I think a less distinguished person coming up with these proposals would probably be discarded by a lot of the economics establishment, the academic establishment, but also maybe in the more political arena. But I think this is quite refreshing. Obviously, these issues are very important, high on the agenda, and quite often any proposals to do something about income or inequality in various dimensions are discarded as being non-starters or just impossible. Now, I think the kind of country that Sweden is, or the Nordic welfare state as a sort of a societal model, encompasses some of the features called for in this book. It was mentioned here, for instance, that we do have, like even now we have this explicit target for reducing unemployment, but of course we also have we try to have a fair insurance element in the social insurances. We have relatively generous child benefits and a number of the things that have been mentioned. So inequality is at a lower level than in many other countries or other types of societal models. But as was mentioned by both Professor Atkinson and Ola, it has risen as in other countries. I think, although the book is, as was also mentioned, it's quite obviously written for a British audience. There are many concrete examples from the UK. Probably countries such as Sweden is a more likely candidate for implementing some of the more far-reaching ideas here than the UK or the United States, which is or has been Professor Atkinson's other home country. We do have that, I don't know, Ola call it maybe inequality ethos or something like that. But it's in our tradition to be quite open at least to measures that is conducive to equality. Nevertheless, my assessment is that several of the proposals would be non-starters even in this country, and maybe we will talk more specifically about which ones that I think are non-starters. But let me say something more, we'll show you some graphs about the development in Sweden. You did see something from Professor Atkinson's presentation. But if we look at income inequality as measured by the Gini coefficient, Sweden has, well, is at a lower, relatively low level. But the increase, so here you see the change from 85 to more recent years, has actually been quite remarkable. And in this graph, I've circled the UK over there, where there's also been an increase in disposable income inequality, but as you can tell, it's been much greater in Sweden. And this is obviously a source of concern. And if you look more in detail at the income distribution, what you can see here, well, this graph takes its start in the mid-1990s, is that there is sort of a spreading out of the income distribution. The incomes here at the bottom, the lowest decile, in real terms, this is measuring disposable income in real terms, well, it's relatively flat. Actually, the average increase here is less than 2% per year. Whereas the highest decile, of course, is a quite dramatic increase. So there, the average annual increase is above 4%. So the income distribution is sort of spreading. And here you have various measures of the Gini coefficient. So here is including capital income and capital gains. And here is a measure purging the numbers from such income and gains. So you see that a lot of this increase or these spikes that you also see here in the Gini coefficient, are related to what's going on in the regarding capital income and capital gains. But even if we exclude that, we also see an increase in the Gini coefficient. So there is clear evidence of increased inequality if we look at disposable income. But that is, of course, not all. And we do have some elements in the welfare system that partly counteract this. So here, this picture illustrates the kind of differences that we see between different types of welfare or societal models. So if we look at the Nordic countries, and the kind of public expenditures that goes to transfers, you will see that a quite large share is in terms of in-kind transfers. That's a very important aspect of trying to equalize the situation between different individuals and households. This goes, of course, hand in hand with also a tendency for the overall sort of tax burden to be relatively high in the Nordic countries. And that's quite different from more Anglo-Saxon models like the UK and the US. And these in-kind transfers, I mean, that's in terms of free education and free healthcare, subsidized childcare and so forth. So that's a very important part of our system. And one aspect that has been emphasized by, among others, Torben Andersen, a Danish economist, who has been writing about the sort of the Nordic welfare state and how it may be that these types of states, although economists would have it that they entail very negative incentives for labor market participation and these things, they're actually doing quite well. So one thing that he points to is that if we look at public spendings, a very large share is more active spending rather than passive, active being spending on things like education and active labor market policy, these things, rather than just income transfers like welfare benefits. And he sees that as one reason why these economies are actually also doing quite well in terms of productivity and growth. Nevertheless, the development since mid-90s with increased inequality is a big concern for this government, obviously. So there are a number of things that the government is trying to do in order to reverse this or at least counteract this. So there are certain policies that are likely to reduce disposable income inequality, which may not be the most important part, but still. So some of these things are, we do have an earned income tax credit in Sweden, is something that also Professor Atkinson advocates. But in our case, it has been, it hasn't been phased out for people with higher incomes. So the government is proposing a phasing out for people earning over 50,000 Swedish kronor per month. So that's something that is going to increase the marginal tax too. So I think that's going to increase it to more closer to 60% than the 56 that I think Ola mentioned. Then there is also reduction in this. I think Ola called it subsidies on rich people's consumption. I guess that's. There is a reduction in the tax subsidy for household construction services, the ROT-avdrag. Now that's a subsidy for, a lot of it goes to refurbishing owner-occupied apartments and houses. So it is something that is quite regressive in the sense that it mainly goes to households with higher incomes. So there's also some measures that increases the income of households with smaller margins. So there's a lower tax on pensions for senior citizens with the lowest pensions. The child support benefits are raised. And there's also measures trying to raise the replacement rate in the unemployment insurance, which has been hollowed out for a number of years, quite remarkably. So that's also trying to increase the insurance element in the social insurance systems. So these are some things, but then of course what the government thinks are maybe the more important things are the in-kind transfers. It's the investments that are being made on education, on health and elderly care. These kind of things that are also important in reducing inequality in the broader sense. Now, let me end by saying something, what I think are the limits for what can be done in Sweden. And this is quite my personal interpretation from having been, well, as was mentioned here, I spent a fair amount of years doing monetary policy, then you're not so overly concerned about equality or inequality aspects. But I also have a past being on the Fiscal Policy Council and the previous Economic Council and so forth. I've been seeing some of the reforms that have been made in Sweden over the last few years, and my personal interpretation is that in Sweden it is quite difficult to get support for reforms based on an intrinsic rather than instrumental concern for inequality, and this is a distinction that Professor Atkinson discusses in the book, that instrumental concern would be that, well, inequality is bad for growth. So now we have studies showing that inequality is bad for growth. The OECD has written about it, the IMF has written about it. These are things that tend to get traction in the public debate and that are quite useful in trying to push for measures that would reduce inequality. But this sort of the more intrinsic concern that is just bad with inequality, I think that's a much harder sell, in spite of the fact that maybe we are we have this equality pathos, or we view ourselves as a quite solidaric society. Another issue is that I think reforms that suggest a return to the 1970s is a no-no. And now it looks as that was the golden era of income equality in countries such as Sweden, many other countries as well. But my impression is that for those who are old enough to actually remember what it was like in the 1970s, it's not something that you would welcome to go back to. I think there is a sense that things tended to go a little bit too far, maybe in terms of redistribution, but there were also quite a high level of conflict in the labor market in those days, also something that I think not even the trade unions would want to go back to. And then I think something that influences the debate in Sweden very much, I think, is the how vulnerable we are for globalization forces. It's a small open economy, obviously, but also an economy that is, at least the private sector, the manufacturing sector, being quite dominated by these large, very highly internationalized companies. And they seem to be very mobile. And I think that's something that creates a concern for doing things here that would push them away. And in a sense, we are quite vulnerable to sort of race to the bottom in a sort of a global quest for attracting investment and firms. And so what I see here is maybe, so the Prime Minister, he has advocated sort of a new global deal as a possible way forward that would be a little bit exporting the Nordic model to those other countries that we are competing with. But that'd be something of having quite a strong partnership for a better society with the trade unions and the employers association and governments, and trying to come together and push for a strong social bond of confidence between the different actors in society, and also for a fair balance between capital and labor. And not maybe doing it together with other countries, together with these large multinational companies. I think maybe that would be a way of alleviating a little bit of this worry that we are putting ourselves out of the market if we push for things that go beyond what you find in other countries. So thank you. Thank you.